Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Del challenges the status quo, questions everything, and empowers you to return to your core beliefs to make your life better. If you're ready to hear the truth and get your roadmap to the lifestyle you really want, the next hour will change your life. And now, your host, self-made millionaire, national award-winning investor of the year, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and with me today here on Tell Del is Mr. Steve Tennyson. Now, before we get into interviewing Steve, I just want to give you a few facts because there's so much on his resume that I think that I want to just list some of it out to intrigue you to want to listen to this show today. First of all, you've got an individual that came here at Lifestyles with about $250,000 in net worth, and in a short period of time, he built that to $4.3 million of net worth. He not only did that, he went through a painful divorce and came out the other side of it and reworked his life. During that time, he ran into the pandemic. So you've got this catastrophe, disaster cycle going on. He comes out of that by winning multiple awards with his apartment complex. And we've got a local award here in Houston, which is the Property of the Year Award in 2020. Then he goes on and wins the 2021 Community Crisis Response of the Year Award. He's also been featured in People Magazine. And he's been in The Abode, which is the Houston Apartment Association's magazine. He's been interviewed on Fox News about the crisis of COVID and how landlords were working their way through it and helping their tenants get through it. His story goes on and on and on. And I just wanted to lay out some of the facts for you before we start digging in so that you will understand that you're going to have to listen to the whole show to get a good glimpse into Steve's life. So, Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Del. It's a pleasure to be here.
2004. You're an engineer. You're a very technical guy. You've got degrees and degrees and more degrees and different things. Just didn't like your job, huh?
I like my work. I just got I got tired of working for other people. I got what you call bosses syndrome.
Yeah, I call it bad boss syndrome.
The only cure for bosses syndrome, yeah, is to go run your own business.
Exactly. Bad boss disease is what I call it. That's yep. No doubt. All right, so you decided to go out and you looked into Lifestyles, decided to become a member, and I usually go deeply into, you know, how you did that and found that, but you've got so much to talk about. I'm just going to just glance at this. What attracted you as a very analytical person that you are to come to Lifestyles and get started here?
I mean, the first thing that got me in the door was your slogan, your quote, "Free yourself from corporate America by establishing passive streams of income through real estate investing." And when I heard that, I was ready to be free. I had a high-tech career for 13 years and 7 different jobs, very unstable. I made good money, but it was not, I had no security for me or my family. And then when I went to Lifestyles, you know, because I'm a numbers guy, I saw what you were laying out as a plan, as a model to achieve that financial freedom, and it made sense. Now, I didn't know anything about real estate. You know, I'd bought my own home, but I'd never, you know, invested like that. But like I said, the business model, the map that you guys laid out, it all made sense numerically. So I was in.
When you got into your first deal, you hitched your wagon to one of our leading superstars at the time. And then you went on and got in bed with another, and I don't mean it, but we got into business with another one.
We were close, but we weren't that close.
another one of our superstars. I guess the question I want to get to is that when you came out of the blocks, the first couple of deals you got into with people, they were all leaders in the industry. Yeah. And so was that part of your plan, or did that just happen?
Well, My original plan, because I didn't really understand Lifestyles, I thought I was going to, you know, join and buy a bunch of rent houses. And I found out that to achieve that financial freedom that I wanted, I was going to have to own a couple of dozen to replace my earned income. And you told me, you know, there's no way. You know, you have a full-time job, you got a family, you got a baby. You know, it's just go find yourself a lead, invest your money with him, and build up your capital so that you can eventually go do your own deal. Because I had enough net worth at that time that I was close but not quite, and this was just to kind of like push me into my own situation. And so I did that. I invested with Emory, and that was a good move. And then later, my wife at the time, my ex-wife, she had a windfall from an inheritance, And she gave me like $260,000 to go invest in whatever I wanted, and I put all of it with Ira. And that ended up being the best move I ever made. Because Ira and I became good friends. We would drive around, we'd look at properties together, we'd analyze deals together, we'd argue, fight, and figure out how to make this stuff work. Also, while applying the kind of value play concept that Emory had brought to lifestyles, and together we just started acquiring one deal after another. Like when Wynn would refinance, I'd invest all the money in the next deal. And when that one refinanced, I put money in the next deal. And kept doing that until I had, you know, the one deal with Emory and four with Ira. And really, the four with Ira was all invested with the same money because they just kept refinancing, and I kept putting the money back in. And it was always everything I had. So I was kind of like throwing the ball long, but every time I threw it, Ira caught it and ran with it, which was great.
Yeah, you guys had quite a good long run of success there. And yeah. What I'm doing right now, I'm trying to process in my mind kind of the timetable of this, because I wanted to bring in two items, and I don't know which one to bring in first. And I guess is that eventually you went on and bought your own deal, but I think we're gonna let that one sit for a second because I want to get into details on that deal. So let's talk about this. Devastating blows in your life. The wife and you get divorced. Because she had invested with you and you guys split up, that some of those assets got split apart between the two of you. That's a devastating thing to see happen. And then Ira dies. And that's your bread and butter, man. And when he goes away, that whole portfolio becomes unstable. How did you get through all that, Steve? I mean, that's a lot of beating down and burden in the couple of years period of time there.
I mean, Ira was, I mean, yeah, he was my bread and butter. He was also my best friend. And I worked for him for 10 years when he had his property management company. I was his director of operations. And then even after, you know, I went off to go buy my own deal, he invested in my deal. And we still talked all the time. And I kept doing stuff for him. And he helped me. And it was just, I don't know, it was, as you say, devastating to lose him. You know, Ira kind of kicked me out of the nest so I could go do my own deal. I bought the deal in August of 2017, and then within months, my wife files divorce on me, and I spent the next year and a half, because it was kind of a high net worth, complicated divorce, and settlements were hard to come by, and the ultimate settlement was to split the assets 50-50. Now, you have to understand, she has a job, and I don't have a job, or I don't have a W-2 job, right? All my income is from investing from these properties that we own jointly, and when she took half, I lost half my income and had no job. Wow. So that was financially devastating for me. I had net worth. I quit the divorce with about $2 million in net worth, but my income was barely enough to pay the bills. And then not long after that, Ira passed away. And so, yeah, it was a very discouraging stretch. And I bought the property that I bought, Mirabella. It struggled for years through one, you know, calamity after another, whether it was road construction, rodent infestation, murders on the property, just everything that could go wrong went wrong with that deal. And especially through the divorce, I remembered, again, something that you talked about in Lifestyles, how it doesn't matter what's going on in your personal life. You have to show up and do your job, do your duty to yourself, your family, your investors, your community, your employees. You talked about Johnny Carson. And how, you know, the Tonight Show guy, right? And how he went through multiple divorces while still doing his show. Every night he would get up on stage and the band, you know, Doc Severinsen would play and he'd come out and do his monologue and joke around with the big guy.
And the music goes on. We'll come back for the break. Right back with Steve Tennyson and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Ever wondered what it's like to be a part of Lifestyles Unlimited? Del Walmsley tells you what to expect when you join us for the next live online free workshop.
We've been here for 30 years. Over 30 years, we've had and or do have roughly 50,000 plus members all over the United States. We have retired tens of thousands of people, and it's just incredible what you're going to find that you're going to be in here. Not only are you going to find the greatest amount of information and education, you're going to find the people, the most open people you've ever met in your entire life.
Come meet the people at Lifestyles Unlimited who will help you change your life and empower you to stop depending on a paycheck, your 401k, IRA, or Social Security for your future. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. At the free workshop, we'll teach you the five ways to make money with real estate, cash flow, equity capture, appreciation, equity buildup, and the tax advantages. Like Dell says, we'll open our books and show you how the numbers work with both single family and multifamily case studies. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Dell Walmsley.
Welcome back to the Dell Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today on Tell Dell Tuesday is Steve Tennyson out of Houston, Texas. And Steve's story is the telltale lemons into lemonade story. You know, had a job that he was unhappy with, decided to get out of it, got into being an entrepreneur, took $250,000, turned it into $4.3 million. World was his lemonade. He was rocking it. Had a great friendship with Ira Gross, who was very successful and invested with him in multiple deals, at least four or five of them together they did. And then all of a sudden the bottom falls out. Wife and him get a divorce. And did you get the daughter or did she get the daughter?
Well, the daughter was old enough that she's like 20 now. So there wasn't a contest in that regard. We did joint custody.
Okay. So we went through the divorce, and then Ira died, he motivated you to go out and get into being a lead investor yourself. You became a lead investor, bought a property, and then just, it was almost like there was a proverbial storm. I'm going to leave out the expletive.
Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Yeah. I mean, you want to hear the early Mirabella story?
Yeah, go ahead and tell the story, because sure. I just want people to understand that you're still smiling and laughing right now. And like the last time I talked to you, you were almost crying. So I just go ahead and tell the story.
Yeah, so when I first saw Mirabella, like I went there with the broker, with a lifestyles broker to look at it, and it was not pretty. It was not at all what I wanted to buy. But I knew the neighborhood it was located in, and I saw the potential that this property had, and I bought it. I bought it anyways because I had that vision of what it could be. And I got investors. You know, they believed in me. They invested their money, and we all went and bought this place. And that first, upon closing, my manager went to walk the property. She says, "Boss, you said this place was supposed to be 86% occupied. It's actually 72% occupied, and a lot of the people that we do have, they don't belong here."
Wow.
So that wasn't great. Yeah. So that first summer, we bought it in August.
Well, at that very same time, I've got to ask you this question, and I'm going to let you get back to this little continuum you have of stuff that went wrong. But at that very same time that you bought that is when I think your wife and you got divorced. Did she divorce you because you bought this ugly thing? Now, that's kind of a tongue-in-cheek question, but maybe not.
You know, it's a dangerous thing to ask a man why his wife divorced him. We saw the world so very differently. I come from a family that loves America, strong military tradition, and she just came from a totally different background. And we hung it together for a while and you know, had a lovely daughter who we're both very proud of. She's in college now. But I think ultimately she just decided she'd had enough. She just said, "I'm tired of being married." And that was her reason for filing. And I'm like,
all right, so we're not going to blame this one on Mirabella then, because I'm just going to add that to the list of things that Mirabella had brought to your life that was so unpleasant.
She refused to go look at the property when I said, "You know, honey, I just bought this property. It's, you know, my business now. You want to come look at it?" She's like, "No." And then so I bought it in August, and that November she filed. So that was my Thanksgiving. And then, you know, we found out that the place was very poorly occupied. There was way more deferred maintenance than what I saw during due diligence. A lot more challenges in that regard. But my plan at that point became, man, let's just get units ready as quickly as we can. Never mind the rehab plan, the interior upgrades. I need income. Because the longer I let this, you know, vacancy issue last, the more I'm spending my rehab budget on vacancy loss. And so we did specials. We, you know, whatever it took to get bodies in apartments paying rent so we could get back to break even. And we did. And we actually did it over the holiday season, which is usually the slow season for apartments. But we filled it well enough until the next year when the city came and tore up our street.
2017 wasn't a bad year for apartments. Actually, it was a pretty good year. So you were able to get back on your feet. But then they, by tearing up your street, they limited access to your property.
Yeah. So my street is like one of those little Houston streets. There's two lanes with ditches on both sides. And they tore up one whole side of it, putting in a new gas line. And then they closed the other end of the street because they were working on that street. So it was a one-lane, dead-end street. And they were also building townhomes on the street. So I had construction equipment up and down the street all day long. And it was literally a construction zone. And my property was right in the middle of it. And then down on Shepherd, where how you get to my property, there was a big sign that said road closed. How's that for advertising?
Oh, man.
So I jumped on the internet. I made sure everybody could see us on Google Maps. And we got some prospects, but not a lot. Nobody wanted to live in my, it was dirty. It was loud. It was hard to get out of the parking lot sometimes. So we lost all of the occupancy that we gained. We lost it again. And that was the summer of 2018. So I lost my second good leasing season.
Mirabella is the street that comes off of North Shepherd, north of 610 Loop, right?
Yeah. It's Oak Street between North Shepherd and Brinkman.
I know where it is. I used to own five properties right there.
Yeah, you had all the Candlelight properties.
I had three Candlelights, and then I had Garden Oaks, and then I had one other around the corner from there, a little small one. So, yeah, I know that area exactly. So that street, man, if that street was torn up, you're right. There's no way to get in there.
Yeah, especially, you know, the guys with the big trucks, they're scraping mirrors trying to get past all the diggers and the and the barrels and whatever they got set up. It was terrible.
Wow.
But yeah, that was all of 2018. They spent the whole summer doing all that. And then finally they finished, and it's great now. I got a gas line that doesn't break, and Brinkman Street is beautiful. New sidewalks, new paving. They lowered it to help with drainage. But while they were putting it in, it was tough. And then, over the non-leasing season, over the holidays, we managed to build occupancy back again, you know, little by little. And then the summer of 2018 is when we had an inexplicable, unexplainable rodent infestation. We had field mice. We have a bunch of empty fields next to the property, and they all just decided Mirabella was a great place, and they wanted to move in, too. So, of course, I called, you know, my professional pest control company, and they set up traps and put poison everywhere. And we started filling holes on the exterior of the property. Because remember, this is like a 70-year-old property. So, you know, we had cracks and stuff in the brick. And we just started filling holes. And little by little, the problem, you know, went away. But during that summer, people just left in droves. There were so many mice, they couldn't cope. People would sign a lease, stay for a couple of months, and just leave in the middle of the night. And it was because they didn't want to live with mice. And who wouldn't? I can't blame them. But we did get on top of the problem. We did eventually solve it. But that was pretty much ate up leasing season 2019, I think now. Just gone. Occupancy fell. And then my manager quit because she was frustrated because she couldn't make the deal.
All right, Steve, we got to go to break, man. We'll come back and get the rest of the story after the break. We'll be right back.
Everyone is asking, is it still a good time to invest in real estate?
We see no indication that for the foreseeable future, and even the unforeseeable future, no indication whatsoever that real estate is suddenly not going to be the best vehicle for creating wealth and passive income for your family. And so that would say that now is the time to get in. And we very rarely talk about this because we talk about cash flow. But now we're talking a little bit about capital gains and what the future brings in that property. Because it's real. At the end of the day, you have all your cash flow, but you've got this nice capital gain when you sell. And the inflation that we see and the reasons for it are going to continue. And we're going to see great capital gains at the end of the line when we sell these properties.
Get in on the next free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today is Steve Tennyson, and Steve is our Tell Del Show interview for today. And he's been telling us a story of going from success to unhappiness in his job, to quitting and then becoming an entrepreneur, taking $250,000, turning it into $4.5 million, $250,000, turning it into $4.5 million, and then a series of challenges in his life, a divorce that comes up, and then right when he was buying his first property as a lead investor, all of his investing previous that had been as a passive who was also co-managing with the person he was passive with. But he decided to step on his own, bought his first property, and the property turns out to be just a real problem. He's got every problem in the book. First of all, the property's old as death itself. I know, because I used to have properties right around it. I looked at buying it myself, and I walked away from it many years ago. And so you own it now. It's even older than when I looked at it. And then you've got all the situation, the massive deferred maintenance on this thing. And then you've got the fact that they had a field mice infestation, and then they had the road shut down in front of them, and there's only one way in and one way out of this thing, and that road was shut down. Steve, you think it couldn't end, but then you had COVID. As if that wasn't enough, right at the apex, COVID starts. Tell us how that affected you.
Yeah. Well, so my manager quit because she was sick of the place and not being able to achieve the results that she hoped she could. And my new manager, Rosemary, I hired her, and she turned the place around. It was going right in the right direction for the first time in a long time. And that's when COVID hit. And we decided, because this has affected a lot of property owners, a lot of rental owners, that their residents couldn't pay their rent anymore, and they were trying to get these people out of their property so that they could, you know, keep making money and keep paying their bills. But at Mirabella, we decided instead of trying to get rid of people, we would do everything we could to keep them, to help them. And Rosemary helped people track down their stimulus checks when the government was doing the stimulus checks. Even though it was a drop in the bucket, it helped, right? And she helped people file for unemployment, folks who had lost their job because the government made work illegal. She helped people get on food stamps so they could eat. Because the thing that the government didn't understand when they locked down the economy was that there's a lot of people, like my customers, who live paycheck to paycheck, hand to mouth, and when you tell them they can't go to work, you know, homelessness happens, hunger happens, fear, desperation. My people were desperate and hungry and fearful, and we helped them as much as we could. And the church, you remember Community of Faith Church on Pinemont?
Yes. In fact, when we had the big hurricane there, the HUD, president of HUD, I think his name was Cisneros from San Antonio, yeah. He had come up there and met with the mayor at that church, and that's where they were departing all the food and water they were giving. And I used to go there because I own all those properties there and tip my, especially the seniors' place, and get my pickup truck mm-hmm. and fill it, you know, 5 foot high in the back of the pickup bed and go up and down the street and feed those people over there. So I know exactly what program you're talking about, man. You got in that too?
Oh, absolutely. It started, they offered us food to feed the kids who were home from school. Because when they shut down the schools, a lot of my kids are like low-income free lunch kids. And when they couldn't go to school, they lost their best meal of the day. And so the church would bring lunches for the kids, like 25 lunches, because we didn't have a lot of kids. But once they got there, they realized the adults were hungry. So 25 lunches turned into like 150 lunches every day, Monday through Friday. And it was so much, they said, we can't stay here and hand out these lunches. Can you please hand them out for us? And so my employees would spend like 2 hours out of the middle of the day just handing out lunches when they should be on their own lunch break. And then they started their food drive program there at the church, where people would drive through and they'd load food into their trunks. We volunteered for that. And I told my employees, I said, you don't have to go. You know, it's okay if you don't want to go. But if you do go, you can stay on the clock. I'll pay you for your time. But we would go for 2 hours in the middle of the day during the busiest part, and we would help our community. And if there was food left over, you know, because we helped the church with their program, they would call us and say, hey, we got butter, we got apples, milk, whatever they had. And we would go there with a couple of trucks and bring it back for our residents. And if we had food left over from that, we would distribute it throughout the neighborhood. Like the other rent houses, the property down the street, there was the construction guys, you know, thank God they were working. But we would bring them food. And If there was still food left over, my employees would take it to their churches and hand it out at their churches. So we became part of that food distribution network, helping not just my residents, but the whole community.
Let me ask you a question. When I was doing that, they had come up with this stupid rule that the only way you could get food is if you could drive. You couldn't walk on site to get the food. You had to drive up to get the food.
You can walk on now.
Okay, they had it that way, and that's when I went there, and I brought the news, because the news people, I told them, look, this is something that's really wrong with this, because, look, I own a senior citizen place right down the street. Those people don't have cars. They can't drive over here and get the food. So when I met with Cisneros there, that's when they decided, okay, we'll let you, if you can prove you've got a place, take the food with you. Well, like you said, once I started taking the food, they started wanting me to give it to everybody. So I became a delivery truck. I got pictures of me in my F-250 driving up and down Pinemont with people waving at me and stuff, man. It's just crazy. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And that community over there, it needs stuff like that. The other thing about what you're talking about here, about helping those people, Steve, a lot of them are uneducated. Some of them can't even read and write.
And that's why it was so important. I mean, yes, the unemployment was out there. The food stamps were out there. A lot of our people were not sophisticated enough to apply for that help.
Exactly.
And when the rent relief money came out, never mind them signing up. Forget it. My manager signed up everybody who owned the balance, and then she would go to them and get the information to complete the application.
Which isn't easy, by the way. There's a lot of information you had to obtain.
Yeah, driver's license, medical bills, the lease, that was your last paycheck when you had a job. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff that people don't always have just laying around. And Rosemary would keep hounding them, says, look, I'm going to get your rent paid. Have faith. Work with us. And everybody did. It was wonderful. Oh, and while most properties they stopped doing resident events because of COVID, they didn't want to accidentally make people sick or whatever. We had extra events at Mirabella because people were all home, they weren't working, and they were in front of their TVs watching the news and just getting more freaked out and depressed by the hour. And so we celebrated Easter, we did Thanksgiving, Christmas, everything we could think of to get people out of their homes, to at least get out in the sunshine and look around and say hello to their neighbors and give them hope, give them a reason to get away from their TV set and to feel normal again.
So how long did this go on, Steve?
I mean, in a way, it's still going on. We're still getting food for the kids. But at this point, most of the adults are back to working. We still have people signing up for rental assistance because we still have a few stragglers who, a lot of these people, they had one job and it was their whole life. And when they lost it, they couldn't get it back. Now they're like kind of teetering from one job to the next, one opportunity to the next. And sometimes they have income and sometimes they don't. And I hope eventually they settle down into a stable situation. But there's still like echoes reverberating from that whole shutdown that my people, some of them are still suffering from it.
Yeah. We've only got a minute and a half left here. Quick question, then we're going to change the topic completely. And the quick question is, were you able to recover as far as occupancy? Have you filled it back up again?
Yes. Because of what we did for our residents, we have the best reputation in the neighborhood. The property filled up to 100%. Our turnover dropped to as low as 15%. Everybody wanted to live here. Nobody wanted to leave. And anybody who could pay rent did pay rent because they could see what we were doing for them and for the community. So occupancy went up, income went up, NOI went up, and we refinanced the deal.
Excellent. Excellent. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, Steve, I want to talk about all the outcome of this as far as all the publicity, the accolades, the awards and stuff that you guys garnered for your service to your local residents and neighborhood. In fact, everything, the whole area. So we're going to want to cover that. If you get your list out of all those things, because I know it's so long, I'd have to go to the list to remember it. But we definitely want to get to that when we get back from the break. So for the rest of you out there, we'll be right back with Steve Tennyson and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Del
Wamsley on the economy and politics.
What happens if the economy turns around and goes back down now the Democrats are in power, or inflation becomes rampant and all of a sudden it becomes very difficult to do business? I was listening to an economist the other day, and he pulled out this chart of GDP. He said, look, here's what I want you to do. He said, tell me anywhere from 1950 to 2021 where the Democrats took power and where the Republicans took power. He said, point it out for me. And the truth of the matter is, you can't tell.
If you're sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what the politicians are going to do, or waiting to see what the economy's going to do, if you're trying to predict the future, stop. Politicians and the economy have no bearing on your success or failure. Only you do. Register for the next live online free workshop. We'll unfold the map to retirement in 5 years or less, regardless of what's going on in the world. It's the same proven strategies we've been using for 30 years through every political party and economic cycle you can think of. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. With me here today on Tell Del Tuesday is Steve Tennyson out of Houston, Texas. Steve has won multiple different awards and has today shared with us a story that is up and down as much as any roller coaster life that you could have heard the story on before. Now we're at the end here, and we're talking about coming out the other end of that really just disastrous experience that ended in and or is still ending in the COVID experience that we're all going through right now. So, Steve, let's talk about this. You tell me the order you want to explain it in, but you basically started getting some recognition. So how and when did this all start, and what did it mean to you?
I mean, it started because of how we were taking care of our customers. In all of 2020, when, you know, evictions were making the news, we only evicted one resident, and it was because she refused to take assistance and refused to pay her rent, even though we knew she had income. And, you know, that's why there's a thing called eviction, because some people just don't pay when they could. So she's gone, but only one. And then in 2020, I think we've had one or two. So we really have done everything we could to keep people in their homes and gone above and beyond for our residents because, you know, like I said, they're not fancy people. They live hand to mouth, and we help them stay in their homes and stay fed. And that's really where all the awards came in, caring enough about my customers, my good customers who couldn't pay for no fault of their own, and finding a way to keep them so that they can continue to be my customers. And that's where the awards came from, that sort of proactive, that creative approach, that compassion. And really the first person that won an award was my manager, Zego, the payment processing company. They have their own Property Manager Hero Award, and Rosemary won that just hands down. They said it was a slam dunk. Nobody was even close. And when she won that award, she was like, well, you know, doesn't ACA do awards? And I was like, yeah, let's apply for one of those. And I applied, and we won it, the property award. And then once you win a local apartment association award, the national association then invites you to apply for a national award. And I signed up for two, for the property award and for the community crisis response award. And I knew I was going to win that one. We just knew it. And sure enough, we did. But we were a finalist for the property award. I guess they figured I needed to share. And then I finally applied for Independent Owner of the Year. And it's funny, when I first started, I was not looking for awards. I was just trying to take care of my business. And at first I was trying to survive, and then I was trying to help my customers survive. And awards were the last thing in my mind. But once I started to apply and started to tell my story on paper to apply for these awards, I'm like, holy cow, look at what we've done. And I felt proud that this is what I do for a living. I'm not just a landlord. I'm part of a community. I can make a real difference in this neighborhood with my customers and help them overcome one of the, you know, greatest disasters of our lifetime. And so, of course, we won awards left and right, and I feel good about that. And it's a lot different from being an engineer, you know, working in a cubicle
on
things and not really talking to people. And now being plugged into the network that Lifestyles has and my fellow leads, who we were all struggling trying to figure this stuff out. And we all shared information, and we all helped each other. And we're all trying to help our customers stay in their homes. It's meant a lot to me. I'm really excited now about what I do for a living. Whereas before, I made a good paycheck, but there was no passion there. Today, You can tell. Probably even on the other end of the phone, there's passion here today. And that means something to me. That gives me a reason to get up in the morning and do what I do for myself, my family, my investors, my employees, and my customers. It all makes a difference.
So what's the plan now from this point forward? Because that was a heck of a story, but it's only just the beginning of the rest of the story. What's the future look like for you?
Well, I got Mirabella refinanced like I had planned to do. I mean, it took a lot longer than I thought, but I was able to refinance the deal, give my investors back a significant portion of the equity that they had invested, and we still have positive cash flow, which is great. And I held back a little bit of money to do more renovations on Mirabella because it's an old property and needs more work. But I want to go buy another apartment complex. Believe it or not, I want to go buy another apartment complex. Because I know now, if I can survive Mirabella and everything that happened, I feel like I can do anything, really. Or at least I can go buy, you know, maybe a normal apartment complex, one of those that, you know, like my friends run that have nowhere near the drama that I've endured. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Already, I have investors who are excited to help me do that, so I'm grateful to them.
You got to get the one where the worst complaint you have is the washing machine doesn't work this week or something. You know, that's the kind we have.
My dishwasher's broken.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to another one for you, Steve. I know that you say this meant a lot to you, but I remember when you were telling me this story the first time before I'd ever heard it before, you broke down in tears, man. I don't know if you remember that, but you just lost it while you were telling the story to me. So I'm glad you took the time to tell me. It's a story that needs to get out there because the society, it needs more that kind of caring and appreciation and love. And at the same time, it needs more people out there making money. So I'm really hopeful that the next one you'll pick, you'll be a little more discerning on and have the successes come much quicker and much easier for you this next time. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, Steve.
Thank you, Del. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Folks, think about what you just heard. Maybe listen to it again on the podcast. And when you think that you've got it tough, and you think that you've gone through a tough stretch, pick this up and listen to it again, because it just makes you realize two things. One, how lucky you are. And number two, what the opportunities are in this world to succeed. The unlimited opportunities, even in very tough situations. So for the rest of you out there, remember this. Steve, myself, and the rest of us, we're not doing this for some money. We're doing it for the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
For listening to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, teaching you the opposite of everything you've been taught, so you can obtain the results you've never obtained. Join us 7 days a week. Can't get enough? Visit DellOnTheRadio.com to listen to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, access past show podcasts, and join the conversation.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Wamsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Wamsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Wamsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Wamsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.